So we are holding on Kufmem Hey Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. Line begins Shidre. Okay, we're in the middle of like this. We started yesterday about how Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Asi, two Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan, were having a conversation while in the Beis Medrash while Rabbi Yochanan was taking a nap in the middle of teaching, and they were talking about. Rav Chiya bar Abba asked Rav Ashi for the re to Rav Asi rather to explain a number of things. Some of them about things in Bavel versus Eretz Yisrael. Why are the birds in Bavel fatter than the ones in Eretz Yisrael? Why are the Talmid Chachamim in Bavel? Why do they wear? Why are the Yamim Tovim in Bavel happier than the ones in Eretz Yisrael? Why are the Talmid Chachamim in Bavel? Why do they wear nicer clothes than the ones in Eretz Yisrael? And the fourth one was why the Goyim have the spiritual tumah, the spiritual filth to them, zuama, the Gemara calls it. And Rav Asi gave an answer for each one of them. So then we said Rav Yochanan woke up and said that I disagree. I don't think you're didaktik. He says children like younger light, like you don't really know what you're talking about. And they asked him to explain, and he starts explaining. So in the case of the birds, Rav Asi had answered that actually the ones in Bavel are not the fattest. There are ones in the desert of Aza, which is a part of Eretz Yisrael, that are even fatter. So Rabbi Yochanan said, that's not really it. The real reason is because we said yesterday, when the Jewish people went into Golos after the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, not only the people went into Golos, but because the whole land of it, or at least the whole area of Eretz Yehuda, at least was desolate. So even the birds, even the animals and the birds and everything also went away. So everything, all the animals and all the animal life also went into Golos. And then we said the connection of that with our Gemara was we mentioned in the Mishnah a fish called Kulya Seisponin, which has a soft skin, and also we say also the Gemara is saying a soft spine, and therefore it wasn't able to make the trip back uphill from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, unlike all the other fish who traveled through these underground tunnels that go from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael.
So why were the birds fat in that area then?
So the idea is, we said, because we said yesterday, that Marashah says, because even though Midbar Aza is part of Eretz Yisrael, it was in the hands of the Plishtim at the times of the Churban, and therefore it wasn't included in the Gzeira that the area is going to be completely depopulated. The Pasuk we brought from Yirmiya, from the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av morning, which is tomorrow, and the related psukim about it in the Torah are talking about the parts of Eretz Yisrael that at the time of the Churban were still in Jewish hands, which means basically Eretz Yehuda, the southern part of Eretz Yisrael that was ruled over by Malchus Yehuda. The Plishtim had long since made themselves independent, and they had conquered certain parts of Eretz Yisrael, one of them being this Midbar Aza. So even though Yirmiyah also said Nevuos about how they're going to be conquered and harmed by Nebuchadnezzar and his army, by the Bavlium, nevertheless, they, and maybe they were even taken into Golos, but their land didn't have this effect that came full of sulfur and salt, and that everything, including all the animals and everything, went away from it. So those birds also, like the ones in Bavel, stayed put, and therefore they're able to be very fat. So now we're up to the other three questions that Rav Chiya bar Abba had, which Rav Asi had given his own answers to them, and Rav Yochanan criticized those as being uninformed answers. So we're up to the next one. So again, 10 lines from the bottom of Kufmem Hey Amud Beis. The second question was, why are the Yom Tovim and Bavel extra happy, more so than the ones in Eretz Yisrael? So Rav Asi had given the answer because the people of Eretz Yisrael are poor, and therefore, and not Eretz Yisrael, the people of Bavel are poor, and therefore, like the rest of the time, they're working so hard for a living, and they don't have that they can't afford anything good. But on Yom Tov, they can afford good stuff, so therefore, they're extra happy. Rav Yochanan gives a different reason. Because Bavel and the Jews who are there were not included in the klala of what the pasuk says. The pasuk says, Hashem warns if the Jewish people keep on doing averus. Hashem says, I will end. I will cause to cease all of her rejoicing, all of her happiness, Chaga, her Yom Tovim, Chodsha, her Rosh Chodesh, V'Shabata, and her Shabbosim, V'Chol Moyada, and all her other special occasions. So we see, in other words, that there was a klala on the Jewish people above, on the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, that they're not going to have so much joy on their Yom Tovim anymore. Actually, Marsha points out, I mean, the Pasuk does also mention Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos, but since it starts by saying Kol Mesoisa Chaga, so we have to say that Chodesh and Shabbat are referring to something else. So there's some other aspect in which Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos are not as special in Eretz Yisrael as in Babel, but not in terms of Simcha. Anyway, Uchtiv, and then you have a different pasuk also for in Yeshaya. It was in this past Shabbos. It's an aftorah of Shabbos Chazoin. So this past Shabbos, Chod Sheichem Moyadechem Son Nafshi, Hashem says, I hate your Rosh Chodoshim and your Moyadeis. How you Alayla Torah? They become a burden for me. Hashem says. So Chod Sheichem Moyadechem. The point is, in other words, that when you treat them like your Rosh Chodesh and your Yom Tovim, in other words, you're not doing them L'Shem Shemayim. A person can be celebrating Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov, where he's doing it in the right way, and he's doing it L'Shem Shemayim, but then you have, unfortunately, the people at that time weren't, they were just having parties and whatever, not L'Shem Shemayim. And Hashem says, it's a burden to me, I don't appreciate it at all. What exactly does that phrase mean? That Hashem says that I don't like them, that I hate them. That Hashem is saying I hate them. I can understand if they're not doing it the Shem Shemayim. But in what way is it a burden for Hashem? It's not bad enough that the Jewish people do averus in front of me. They, so to speak, they trouble me to know or to find out or to make them aware what kind of harsh gzera I'm going to bring against them. In other words, they're not only celebrating the Yom Tovim and the Rosh Chodeshim inappropriately, but they're doing it in a way that, so to speak, forces Hashem to punish them and like to decide and make them be aware what kind of punishment he's going to have to bring as a result for that. So Hashem says, therefore, like, so to speak, you're burdening me to have to do something I'd rather not have to do. Okay, so getting back, so the point is, in other words, so Rabbi Yochanan is saying that there's a certain klala on the Yom Tovim in Eretz Yisrael that they're not as happy, therefore, as the ones in Bavel and in other places. So in this connection, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Ein lecha kol rego v'rego, shalei bosa bolshes l'tzipori. There's not a single Yom Tovim where bolshes didn't come to Tzipori. Tzipori was one of the big cities in the north of Eretz Yisrael, where many, many Jews, and in particular, many of the Chachamim lived. A bolshes is an army unit. And Rashi just says Chayla Melech, a unit of the army, but in particular, the Shodesh Bolash means to search and to investigate. So these would be whenever you have an army unit comes to town, they'd always be searching in people's houses. Officially, it might be they're looking for anything illegal. In practice, you can imagine they would probably be taking things that don't. They'd probably be stealing and taking things that don't belong to them, and using the excuse that they're doing it for the army or whatever. So every Yom Tov, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, you had such things in Sipori. So therefore, that's what we're saying. That was part of this klala that it ruined their Yom Tov. V'amar Rav Chanina, and similarly, Rav Chanina says, "Ein lecha kol regel v'regel shalai bo l'Tveria agmoin v'kamtoin v'bal zmoda." There's not a single Yom Tov where they didn't come to Tveria, which is another one of the big cities in the Galil. An agmon, a kamton, and a balzmoda, which are various kinds of Roman officials. Agmon is like the word hegmon. We have in various places in Shas and Midrashim or whatever. It means a duke or a nobleman or something like that. Kamton is actually distantly related to the word count in English, not count like you're counting 1, 2, 3, but a count like a title of nobility. And a Baal Zmoda, there's a few different explanations what it means. One of them is it means people, it means soul, it means the Aruch actually says that in one explanation that it means people who sing, who go around singing inappropriate songs for the entertainment of the Romans. But like this, it also disturbs our Yom Tov. There's a few other explanations. And in fact, the Maharat Chayes points out that the Roman officials usually had high-ranking Roman officials usually had as a mark of their position, they were entitled to have somebody walking in front of them carrying a bundle of sticks with an axe in it. It's called in English a fasces. You get the word fascist in English from it. And the Baal Zmoda, therefore, is that. So, I mean, and the idea of it was supposed to be symbolically that if anybody does anything they don't like, they can take out the sticks and beat the person. So those kinds of officials would always be coming to Tveria on Yom Tovim as well, and therefore it would disturb the Yom Tov. So that's what we're saying. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it's not like you think the reason why the Yom Tovim in Bavel are happier is because the rest of the year they're poor and the only time they're able to have Simcha is Yom Tov. It's the other way around. It's because there's a klala on the Yom Tovim in Eretz Yisrael that there's always going to be these kinds of disturbances from the goyim. Next, the third question was, why are the Tamar Chachamim in Bavel extra, why are they extra distinguished with their clothing? Which we were saying that in Eretz Yisrael, the Tamar Chachamim tended to wear the same kind of clothing as everybody else, whereas in Bavel, they wore special, fancy clothing. So Rav Asi's answer had been because they're not Bnei Torah in Bavel, which meant either Rashi had said it means the Tamar Chachamim themselves in Bavel are not of the caliber of the ones in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore they have to wear nice clothing in order to distinguish themselves. Or we said another explanation was the people of Bavel, the Hamoin Am in Bavel, are not such Bnei Torah, and therefore they don't know to appreciate the Tamar Chachamim if they don't appear in front of them dressed in nice clothes. So Rabbi Yochanan rather gives a different reason. The reason is Lafisha Einan Bnei Makoiman, because the people in Bavel are not in their original place. After all, Bavel is not the place of the Jewish people, Eretz Yisrael is. Da'amri Inchi, it's like the expression people say, B'mosa, in my own hometown, Shmoy, it's enough for me to go by my name. Everybody knows my name and knows to honor me and respect me on the basis of that. B'loy Mosa, when I'm in a different city and people don't know who I am, Toisvoy, then my covered depends on my clothing. The word Toisva means a similar, means a garment. So the same thing, in other words, since Bavel is not the natural home of the Jewish people, therefore the Tamar Chachamim there have to dress extra nicely because people may not know them by name, for example. Okay. And by the way, so the Gemara interjects a second. You have an example to show that not like Rav Asi says that the Tamar Chachamim and Bavel are not such Bnei Torah. You should know like this. You have a pasuk. It's the first pasuk of Daft Torah, Parshas Shavuos. Haboyim Yashvish Yaakov. Those who will come, Yaakov will take root. Yotzitz of Farach Yisrael. Yisrael will blossom and produce flowers. What does that mean? Toni Rav Yosef, Eilu Tamar Chachamim, Shem Bavel, Shoisin Tzitzin Uprochim LaTorah. This refers to Tamar Chachamim and Bavel, who make blossoms and flowers for the Torah, meaning, so Haboyim means those of the Jewish people, Haboyim, who came to Bavel, Yashrish Yaakov, they took root over there and established Jewish communities, and Yotzitz Uparach, and they created blossoms and flowers for the Torah with their propulium, with their explanations of Torah, which is the whole Talmud Bavli and all the other things that come out of Bavel that we have in front of us. So we see, in other words, from that it's not that the Tamar Chacham and Bavel are not Bnei Torah, like Rav Asi said, but rather just the opposite. They are great Tamar Chachamim, but the reason why they wear fancy clothing is because otherwise people may not know who they are, because after all they're in Bavel, which is not the natural home of the Jewish people. Some of the Mefoshim say, in fact, that's when we said before that Rabbi Yochanan criticized them and he called them dardiki, youngsters, for giving these explanations. One thing he had in mind was, in fact, that. Why are you giving an explanation about that? Why, Rabasi, why are you giving an explanation about the Tamar Chachamim that of Bavel that puts them down when, in fact, we see over here that they are really great Tamar Chachamim? Okay. And the fourth question was, why are the goyim filthy beruchnius? So Rav Asi had given the reason because they eat shkotzim or amasim. In other words, according to him, it would come out that intrinsically no person has this zuama, but a person who eats shkotzim or amasim develops that zuama, whereas Jews who don't. Rabbi Yochanan gives a different reason. Shaloi omdu al Har Sinai. The goyim never stood at Har Sinai. Now, what does that have to do? Shabashah shabah nachash al chava. When the Nachash first got involved with Chava, Baal is usually the Gemara's terminology for having relations with. And in fact, Rashi says over here and in some other places in Shas that that's exactly what it means. It means the Nachash didn't just talk to Chava and convince her and trick her to eat from the Eitz Hadas. He actually had relations with her. The Pasuk says, HaNachash Hishiyani, afterwards when Chava is giving the excuse for herself to Hashem, she says, HaNachash Hishiyani V'oichel. The word Hishiyani, the simple meaning, means that he tricked me or he convinced me, but Rashi explains it's also Meloshin Nisuin. So the snake, the Nachash, actually was Mizana with Chava. You know, we had earlier in the Masechta, we had the case over there on Daf Kof Yud. We have a case where a snake does that even nowadays to a woman, crawls into Oisei Makom, and we had a whole description over there of what you have to do in order to get it out of there. So apparently this is what happened over here. So the result was Hito Bazuama. He put into her this ruchni stick of filth. Therefore, Yisrael Sha'amdu al Har Sinai Pasko Zuamasan. The Jewish people who later on stood by Har Sinai, then this Zuama, this filth, went away from them. The Goyim weren't at Har Sinai, therefore it never went away from them, and therefore they still have this filth left over that comes all the way from the Chatei Tadas. And this is, by the way, just standing by Har Sinai. This is there's a famous vort on it that says, you know, we say in Dayenu, Ilu Kervanu Lefnei Har Sinai V'Len Nosan Lanu Asa Torah, that if Hashem had brought us in front of Har Sinai and hadn't given us the Torah, Dayenu, so what do you mean? What would we have accomplished by being in front of Har Sinai? So there's a lot of different explanations. One of them is a famous one because it says there, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahor, that for the first time the Jewish people were Achdus, so that would have been a great thing, just the fact that we had Achdus over there, even if we hadn't received the Torah. But based on our Gemara, there's another explanation. Just being in front of Har Sinai was enough to take away that Zuhama. So therefore, we're saying that alone would have been a great thing if Hashem had done that for us. Okay.
What about Gerim?
The Gemara is going to say that now. And what about Gerim? They weren't there at Har Sinai. So Marsha explains the question is like this. Mela, when it comes to, okay, we know, of course, that all the neshamas of all future Jews were also at Har Sinai. So there's no question about Gerim in future generations that fine, you know, their neshamas would have been there also. What about a person who became a Ger in that generation? What about them? Why do they still have their Zuama? Or a different way of looking at it that some Mefarshim say is, okay, you know, fine, we can accept that once a person was there at Har Sinai and had that Zuama removed, then that goes down to their descendants. Just like we're saying, the original Zuama went from Adam and Chava to their descendants, so the removal of it goes to their descendants. But what about Gerim, who they and their ancestors were not at Har Sinai, so what's the deal with them? Amalei, and he answers, Afa gavde inu lei havu, mazlayu havu. The difference is with Gerim, even if they personally were not there, their mazel was there. Their mazel meaning the source of their neshama. So therefore, so in fact, Rashi mentions everybody who was there at Har Sinai became kadosh and tahor and were healed of any mum. Even for example, the blind and the lame people, Rashi says. So brings from Sifri. So therefore, by the same token, the mazel, the source of the neshama of Gerim as well was there as well. And therefore, therefore their zuama is able to be removed. Dichtiv, as in fact, you have a pasuk. Moshe says to the Jewish people, "Es asher yeshne po yimonu oimid lifnei Hashem ayoyim lifnei Hashem alakenu." Those who are standing with us today in front of Hashem, when I'm telling you this, the es asher enenu poi v'goimer, and the ones who are not here today, meaning even the ones. In other words, Moshe is saying that even the ones, even Jews who are going to be born in the future, or even Gerim who are going to join the Jewish people in the future, are all here with us now. Baruch. So the same thing. So that pasuk is actually talking about, and that's in Parashas Nitzavim. That's talking about the end of Moshe's life when he's repeating the Torah to them. But the same thing is also true by Matan Torah, that everybody was there, begashmius or beruchnius.
Was Moshe Rabbeinu cured of his kvad peh?
Was he cured of his kvad peh? I think there is actually an explanation that he was, although I'm not sure about that. And in the case of Moshe's kvad peh, there was another reason for it as well. The Ran, I think, mentions in his Drashas a reason why did Hashem have to make it that Moshe, it has to be kvad peh, in order that people don't think, you know why how he got the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim and convinced them to accept the Torah or whatever, because he's this great public speaker and he was able to talk them into it. So therefore, Hashem Davka made him a poor speaker in order that everybody realizes whenever he speaks that it's coming from Hashem. So maybe according to that reason, that had to exist after Matan Torah as well, but I don't know, actually. I don't know. I'm not sure if it says one way or the other. With that said, by the way, the Zohar does say that to a certain extent, after the Chet Egel, the Zuhama returned. And this that Rashi is saying about the physical defects also, it says that also those return after the Chet Egel. But even so, the point is that the Zuhama, at least having been removed by Matan Torah, is much easier now for a person to get rid of, as opposed to the Goyim, who didn't have the experience even at Matan Torah. Then the only way they can do that is by completely transforming themselves and becoming a Ger. Okay. So the Gemara says, "O pliga de Rab Abba bar Kahana." Now this statement that we're saying that the Zuama went away at Matan Torah disagrees with Rab Abba bar Kahana. The Amr of Abba bar Kahana ad shloisha derdas leposka Zuama me'avisenu. It took three generations for the Zuama to be removed from our ancestors. Avraham holidas Yishmael, Yitzchak holidas Esav. Meaning, in other words, they still had Zuama, and because they had Zuama, therefore that resulted in that they fathered Rishoyim, Yishmael and Esav, respectively. Yaakov already had the Zuama taken away, and Holid Yud Beis Shvatim Shloi Ha'yibahen Shum Doifi, he fathered 12 Shvatim, in whom there was no problem, all of them were tzaddikim, because in him, by him already, the Zuama was gone. So we see, in other words, that sort of Abba Bar Kahana is saying that already the Zuama was gone by Yaakov, you know? Whereas before, we were saying that, Rabbi Yochanan was saying that the Zuama only went away when they came to Har Sinai. Okay, obviously it's not necessarily an actual machlokas, because there are different degrees of removing that zuama, where you can, you know, one, you know, the same way as bechlal, we talk about, you know, when did we become a special people? Is it beginning from Avraham Avinu, or is it beginning from Matan Torah? Depending on how you look at it, so here it's a similar kind of thing. Okay. Mishnah says, getting back to Hilchos Shabbos and getting back to topics of food on, and things that you're allowed to do with food on Shabbos, the Mishnah says, Shover adam as a chavis lechalim en a grogris. A person on Shabbos is allowed to break open a barrel in order to eat a barrel full of dried figs in order to eat the dried figs. It's not considered that he's making a keli or making an opening in a keli or whatever, and therefore it should be also ovovadshala yiskaben lasas keli. As long as it doesn't mean to make a keli, meaning to make a nice looking hole. You can make like a jagged hole or whatever, but not like a nice hole that he's gonna then be able to use it in the future as well. It was a barrel. Ah. So now you have like this. Rashi learns, because even though it's mekalkel, we've learned earlier in the Masechta that mekalkel, there's no isser. Now Mefoshim asked, what do you mean there's no isser in mekalkel? We learned before, mekalkel maybe is not a malacha daraisa, but it's still an isser derabanan. How over here are we allowing it? How over here are we allowing it lachila? So there's a lot of different answers. One of them being that Rashi would say maybe that since we're doing it over here for the sake of food, of getting at food, then maybe there's a heter in that. Tosfos though brings a whole different angle. Bechlal also, Rashi holds in a number of places in our Masechta, ein binyan ustira bekelim. So the whole concept of building and demolishing, according to Rashi, never applies to Kalim. So you don't have the problem over here of stira, of breaking, by breaking open this Kali. So the only matter, so it's only a matter of makalko. And again, maybe for food, it's mutter. Tosfos, though, on the other hand, Tosfos, who does hold that there is sometimes binyan with stira b'kalim, they have a whole different opinion of it, which is what we're talking about over here. We're not just talking about any kind of barrel. We're talking about the kind of barrel that was, the Gemara elsewhere calls it mustiki, where it was previously broken apart, and then you glued the pieces back together with tar. So that kind of barrel, you're not going to, if you make a hole in it now, you're usually not going to bother trying to make a nice hole. It's not like you're going to try to fix it afterwards, because again, it's already broken and put back together anyway. So Tosfos holds the heter would only be with that kind of barrel. There are actually Rishonim who say that maybe specifically a barrel, where an earthenware barrel, once it has a hole in it, or once part of it is broken off or whatever, usually you don't fix it, is the heter. Not necessarily, let's say, for example, for a wooden barrel, where often you would fix it afterwards. But this machloikas actually is very relevant to the whole question of opening cans and boxes and packages and whatnot of food on Shabbos. Because according to Rashi, it comes out, as long as you're mekalkel, as long as you're not making a nice keli of it, then you have a general heter. According to Tosfos, it's not so simple. It would have to be mustiki. It would have to be that kind of like pre-broken keli. With that said, there are many poskim nowadays who say that the kind of single-use containers that we often have nowadays, where you open up the container and then afterwards you throw out the contents, or you drink or you eat or whatever the contents, and then you throw out the container, might be considered like mustiki, and even Tosfos would agree that you're allowed to open them. So it gets a little bit complicated, and there's machlokas in among the the more contemporary post-gim, like Reb Shlomo, Good Morning Aura, between, for example, Reb Moshe discusses it, Reb Shlomo Zalman discusses it, other post-gim achronim discuss all the various permutations of what kinds of boxes and cans and bottles and so on and so forth you're allowed and not allowed to open on Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah. One thing for sure, though, we're saying over here in the Mishnah, that as long as you don't mean to make a keli, so if you open something in a way that you are making a functional keli that you're going to use in the future, then definitely that's not allowed on Shabbos. You even have, for example, let's say when it comes to cans, now you have cans of fruit or vegetables or what have you, often, you know, most of the time you open up the can and then afterwards, you know, you use the containers and then you use the contents and then you throw out the can. But the fact is the can is a functional keli. And you could conceivably use it for other things. So you have, for example, I think Reb Shlomo Zalman requires that if you're going to be opening a can on Shabbos, you have to also somehow make it not a functional keli anymore. For example, by opening the other end as well, you make a hole in the other end as well, and that way you haven't made a keli. Milk cartons, you have discussion of, are you allowed to open them? And Reb Moshe has a couple of chuvas on the subject. Yeah, it gets somewhat complicated. Yeah. Okay. You have an additional point also, which is, for example, when you're opening, let's say, soda bottles, you have a question of whether you're removing the cap from the ring that goes around it. Is that making the cap itself into a keli? That's a whole different issue. So sometimes you have people. There are poskim who allow it, which is how you have some people open soda bottles and whatnot on Shabbos. But you do have people who are careful about that and will open them before Shabbos in order to avoid that problem. To break the seal before Shabbos, so that on Shabbos you're not removing the cap from the ring that's left around it around the neck of the bottle. Yeah. So these kinds of things get a little bit complicated. Continues the mission of Ein Nokfin Megufa Shel Chavis, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says also another thing is you're not allowed to make a hole in the stopper of a barrel. Now the usual way they had it was you had their barrels are made out of earthenware. They had a fairly narrow opening at the top relative to the size of the keli. You see sometimes, you know, you go to museums or whatever, you see these old clay cheres that they have from ancient times, and usually the opening of it is much narrower than what they did is in that opening they would stick a magufa, which is also made out of clay, but it was dried in the sun or was whatever, unlike being fired in the oven like regular clay. So that's called the magufa. So Rabbi Huda, that would be the stopper for the barrel. So Rabbi Huda is saying you're not allowed to make a hole in the stopper. But the Chum says it's mutter, as we'll see in the Gemara, because it's not the normal way of making a hole. It's not the normal way of making a hole and of making a keli. Veloik venom mitzida, you're not allowed to make a hole on the side, though. We're going to see in the Gemara, what do we mean the side? Do we mean the side of the megufa, or do we mean the side of the barrel? The point is, in other words, the Chachamim are saying it's not normal to make a hole on the top because then dirt and whatever is going to fall in, but it is normal to make a hole on the side, and therefore that would be Mesakin Kli. That would be fixing or making a Keli on Shabbos. So we'll see in the Gemara whether we're talking about the side of the Megufa or the side of the barrel. Okay. If there was already a hole there before Shabbos, Lo Yitin Aleo Shava, you're not allowed to put wax on it on the hole to close it up. Because then you're going to be smearing out the wax, and that is a malacha. That's a tolda of the malacha of memachik. Memachik is smoothing out a skin or leather or whatever to make it more useful to write on or for whatever purpose you can use the leather for. A tolda of that is memachik is smoothing out thick liquids like wax or whatever. Such a case once came to Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, where somebody did that. Somebody closed up a hole on Shabbos with wax, Arav, in the city of Arav, which is in the Galil. But Omar and Rabbi Yechon says, I'm concerned he might have done it in a way that makes him chayev chatas, meaning he could have just put in a plug of wax and then fine, he's not over, but he might have smoothed it out, and now he's chayev chatas for that. We've learned before there were Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, the Yerushalmi says, was a Rav in the city of Arav for 22 years, and in all that time, they only ever brought him two shilas. We have this one, and we have a previous one that we had in the 16th perek about putting a bowl over a scorpion on Shabbos. So the Yerushalmi says that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai criticized them very strongly, Hayitochan, that in 22 years, you never bothered bringing me any shilas except for these two. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Amar Rav Oshia. Now, the first case of our Mishnah, where we're saying you're allowed to break open the barrel in order to eat the gregris out of it, so Rav Oshia says, Lo shonu ela drusas. That's only talking about when the when the figs in the barrel are pressed together to make an eagle shel dvela, a cake of pressed figs as they used to in those times. Avo mufurados loy, but if the figs are separate, if they're loose inside the barrel, then no, you don't have a heter to break open the barrel to get at them. Breaking open the barrel, Rashi had pointed out on the Mishnah, usually would involve, it wouldn't just be that you punch a hole in it with your hand or something. It would mean that you use a knife or a sword or something like that. So in this case, you can only do that as the Gemara is going to go on to say, only if you anyway need the knife in order to cut the eagle shel dvela. Then while you have it in your hand, you can use it to break open the barrel, but otherwise not. So the Gemara says, Mesi, you have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Reb Shimon Gamliel, maybe Adam is a chavis choyai, and a person on Shabbos is allowed to bring a barrel of wine, umatiz rosh b'sayef, and chop off the top of it with a sword, umanicha lifnei orchim b'Shabbos, and put it in front of the guests on Shabbos, v'enich choshish, and there's no problem with that. Meaning, as we're going to say later on, he wants to show Ayin Yafa. He wants to show the guests how generous he is. I'm not just going to open up the magufa and there's this narrow opening at the top of the barrel. I'm going to open up the barrel wide open and you can take as much as you want. So he cuts off the top of the sword to demonstrate that. I've always thought that would be a rather interesting thing to do on Shabbos, bring a bottle of wine to the table and whack off the top of it. So the point is, wine obviously doesn't need to be cut with a knife or a sword, and still Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, where you're using the sword or whatever just in order to cut off the top of the barrel. So what are you telling me? That's only if you're using the knife in order to cut the figs inside the barrel. The answer is Hahi Rabbanon. That would be according to the opinion of the Rabbanon, who are more makel in the dinim of Muktzah. Masnissin Reb Nechemiah, whereas our Mishnah, what Reb Oshia is saying is that our Mishnah goes according to Reb Nechemiah, where we had before in the Perek, in the 17th Perek on the Dinim of Muktzah, that Reb Nechemiah is very machmir on the Dinim of Muktzah, and he says, as we're going to say soon, that even a kli shemalachta laheter, even a kli whose main purpose is for a purpose that is mutter on Shabbos, he holds you're still only allowed to move it for that keli's primary purpose. So he would say, for example, that a knife, you're not allowed to pick up a knife or a sword on Shabbos and use it to break open a barrel, because that's not the normal use of a knife or a sword on Shabbos. The use of them normally is if you're using it to cut food. So therefore, if you have the knife in your hand to cut the food, then you're already allowed to use it to cut a hole in the barrel, but otherwise not. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My duchke Reb Oshia l'ukmi masnisin k'Reb Nechemia over drusas." Now, what forces Reb Oshia to say what forces Reb Oshia to say that Davka, the Mishnah, has to go according to Reb Nechemiah, and therefore that forces him to say that the figs of our Mishnah are pressed together into cakes. Why does he say more simply? The Mishnah could be according to the Chachamim. It's talking even about loose figs, and the Chachamim are allowing you to pick up a sword for the purpose of breaking open the barrel on Shabbos. So Rava says, because Reb Oshia found the wording of the Mishnah difficult in that case. My iria detani grogris. In that case, why would the Mishnah dafka mention grogris, dried figs? Lisni peiris. The Mishnah could have just said more generally, peiris, fruit. So therefore, obviously, the Mishnah must be talking about drusos, about figs that were pressed together into a cake, which is something that you do with figs that you don't usually do with other kinds of fruit. So realizing that the Mishnah is talking about figs forces him to say, so what's different about figs than other kind of fruit? Because figs are pressed together to make these cakes of these gulei dvela, and therefore the Mishnah must dafka be talking about that, and therefore the Mishnah must only be according to Reb Nechemiah, who wouldn't allow you to pick up the knife otherwise, if you didn't need it to actually cut the eagle shel dvela. Okay. More on this topic, Tanya Choda, one braisa says, choisles shel groigers v'shel tamarim, containers of figs or of dates, choisles, Rashi explains, are containers that are made out of palm leaves, out of lulav leaves, woven together. And what they do is there are certain kinds of figs or dates that don't ripen on the tree. They're poor quality fruit, and they don't ripen properly on the tree. So what you do is you pick them and then you put them inside these choisles and they ripen in there. And then eventually you cut open or break open or whatever the choisle, and you eat the fruit. So one braisa says those kinds of things, matir, you're allowed on Shabbos to undo them, if Rashi says if they're closed, if they're tied closed with a string, then you're allowed to untie that string. Umafkia, you're also instead allowed to untwist the string, in order to get at the contents of the thing. V'choisich, or you're allowed to cut it. V'taniyedach, another braisa says, matu, you are allowed to untie it. Avaloi mafki avaloi chosich, but you're not allowed to untwist the string, and you're not allowed to cut it. So what's the difference? Why does one braisa say that untwisting or cutting would be mutter, and one says that it's osur? And again, the answer is like hasha harabanan harab nechemia, because one braisa is according to the rabbanon who say that you could pick up a knife just for the purpose of cutting this open on Shabbos, and the other one is according to Rav Nechemia that again, even a knife can only be handled on Shabbos if you're doing it to begin with for the main purpose of the knife, which is to cut food. Rav Nechemia says, even a spoon, even a talus, even a knife, all of which are kelim shemalachtam lahetar, all of those, in nitalon, el tzarech tashmishon, on Shabbos, you're only allowed to move them where you're moving them for the main purpose that they're made for. So according to him, you can't even move them l'tzarech mekoymam, if they're in the way and you want to get them out of the way. You can't move them for some other purpose. So according to him, therefore, you can't pick up a knife on Shabbos to cut open or to untwist this rope, that's this string that's holding the choy so close, and therefore, according to him, the only thing you could do is untie it, because that doesn't involve a keli. Whereas the Rabbanan would disagree and say that there. So this also, again, this is also relevant as far as the question of opening packages and boxes and whatnot of food on Shabbos. In particular, Rav Moshe talks about when you have, again, these single-use containers, that might be more like these choyslis that we're describing over here. And therefore, you're allowed to cut them open or break them open or whatever on Shabbos, the same way as you're allowed to cut or break open the choysel. In fact, also on the Mishnah, when we're talking about breaking the barrel to get at the grogers, one explanation of Rishonim is the same way as, for example, you're allowed to crack nuts on Shabbos. So you have the nut meat is inside the shell, and the only way to get at it is by breaking the shell. The same way, when you have these certain containers like this, can be considered the equivalent of the shell of the nut, where you're allowed to break it open on Shabbos. That would be another reason, again, besides the reasons that we mentioned before about Rashi, that it's mekalkel, or that Tosfos, that it was anyway a pre-broken barrel, etc. Another reason would be because, again, when you're doing it in order to get the food inside and there's no other way to get it, then it's similar to cracking open a nut on Shabbos. Okay. So the Rabbanan are saying you're allowed l'chatchila to pick up the knife just for the purpose of cutting open this choysel. Or cutting open the rope that's holding it closed or whatever. Yeah, because they say you're allowed to pick up a knife for any purpose on Shabbos that's mutter, as well as, according to them, you're allowed to pick it up l'tzorech gufoy or l'tzorech mekoymoy, or also mechama l'tzeil, also, for example, if it's out in the open and you're afraid it's going to get damaged. According to Reb Nechemia, is the most machmir of all the chachamim in the dinim of mukta, so he holds this that we're saying over here, that even a klish malachta l'heter can only be moved l'tzorech gufoy. So again, according to him, the only reason you'd be able to pick up a knife on Shabbos is if you're using it to cut food, no other purpose. Once you have it in your hand, then like we're saying in the Mishnah, then you're allowed to also, when once you have it in your hand, where you need it anyway, after you get the food, to cut it, because it's an eagle shall dvela, and you need to cut it, then Reb Nechemia would say, fine, once you have the knife in your hand, you can use it to break open the barrel as well. Okay. Bominem Rav Sheshes. They asked Rav Sheshes a question as follows. Mahul Mivras Chavisa Baburtia Bashabsa. Are you allowed to take a spear and stick it into the barrel and break a hole in the barrel on Shabbos? The question is, Lapischa Kamachavin Vaoser, do we say that he has in mind to make a hole in the barrel that he's going to be able to use in the future? And then v'osur, then it would be osur because then he's making a hole. It's makav patish, and according to Tosfos, it might even be binyan or stira, because again, according to Tosfos, yesh binyan and yesh stira b'kelim. According to Rashi, that ain't binyan and ain't stira b'kelim would be makav patish, because now you're making the barrel more usable, because now it has a useful hole that you can use in the future. For again, right now, yeah, but the question is that you, on the other hand, you are, so on the one hand, we could say you make the main purpose is you're making a Pesach, and therefore that would be also Adumala Ayin Yofa Kamachabin, or maybe what he's doing is, after all, the usual way of making such a hole would be you'd make a nice round hole, and like this, instead, he's sticking in a spear, which is making like a jagged hole or something, so maybe it should be Mutter. And he's just doing it, Ayin Yofer, just to show, again, to show his guests how generous I am that I'm going to serve you a lot of wine. So he answers them, L'pischa k'machavin v'asur. We do say that he means to open up a hole in it, and therefore it's asur. The Gemara says, Meisbi, what do you mean? We learned before, Shimon Gamliel, Mevi Adam Chavis Troyayin, a person can bring a barrel of wine on Shabbos, Umatiz Rosh HaBasayif, and chop off the top of it with a sword. So you see that you're allowed to chop it off on Shabbos with a sword. Why over here would you not be allowed to stick a sword or a spear into the barrel to make a hole? The difference is Hosam Vade La'ayin Yofa Kamachavin, because over there, definitely, he means La'ayin Yofa, because that's why what he's doing is, again, the barrel starts out narrow at the top and then slopes and becomes wider down. He's cutting it off at a wider point. So he's showing Ayin Yofa by showing, I'm not just going to keep the narrow hole for the Magufa open, I'm going to open up a wider part of the barrel. So therefore, for sure, it's La'ayin Yofa and not to make a Pesach. Hocha, but over here, im isid la'ayin yofa kamachavin, if he really meant to do ayin yofa, liftuchi miftach, then he would actually open up the barrel by taking out the megufa, which would make a bigger hole than sticking a sword into it. So therefore we have to say, says Rav Sheshes, that he's obviously not doing it la'ayin yofa, because ayin yofa, you can show more by taking out the megufa and opening up the natural opening on the top of the barrel, the built-in opening on the top of the barrel. So therefore, now if he's making a new opening, then it's showing he's doing it in order to make a Pesach, and therefore that's also. So usually you wouldn't make a hole in the Magufa, but you do sometimes remove the Magufa, and then you pour out the wine, and then you put the Magufa back on afterwards. So the Magufa would be like a bottle cap nowadays or something. So that would be so. In other words, if you're not going to actually cut off the top of the barrel, like Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying, the next most ayin yofa thing would be to take out the stopper and then pour out the wine through that hole on the top of it. If instead you're making a new hole, says Rav Sheshes, you're not doing it for ayin yofa. You're doing it in order to make a hole. In order to make a hole that in the future you're going to be able to use, and therefore that would be also on Shabbos. Well, it could, even just the fact that you're going to use it on Shabbos itself is also, because again, that tatum we're talking about opening containers or whatever are as we said in the Mishnah, v'vachalei skaven lasas kli. You're not meaning to make a keli, whereas over here, Rav Sheshes is saying, by doing that, you're obviously meaning to make a more functional keli that has another hole in it. If you chop it off, then not, because then you're just showing ayin yofa. And you know, we're saying specifically in front of guests, because that's relevant, then you're showing ayin yofa. If you were to do it in private, you wouldn't have a hetter for that either, because then there's no ayin yofa to show. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, ein nokfin megufa chola. We said you're not allowed to make, Rabbi Yehuda had said, you're not allowed to make a hole in the stopper of a barrel. The Chum say that you could, but you're just not allowed to make one at the side. So what do we mean the side? Amar Rav Huna machloikas l'mayla. So Rav Huna says the machloikas is about making a hole in the top of the stopper. Avam, and that's sad. Divrei Hakol also, but making a hole in the side of the stopper, everybody would agree is also, because even the Chachamim would say that's a normal way of doing it, because then you're able to get out the wine through that hole in the side of the stopper, and you're not going to have dirt and whatever fall into the wine. Right? So that the Chachamim would agree you're not allowed to. But to make a hole in the top, they say you would be allowed to. Yeah. So Rav Huna says that's what it means. You're not allowed to make a hole in the side, means even in the side of the stopper. How much more so, Rav Huna would say, you can't make a hole in the side of the barrel itself. Okay. But Rav Chista, on the machlokas min atzad, Rav Chista says no, the machlokas is making a hole on the side of the stopper, avalav gaba divrei hakol mutter. But making a hole in the top of the stopper, everybody would agree is mutter, because that's not a normal way of making it. Because again, that's going to ruin it, because it's just going to, then dirt and whatever is going to fall in through the hole. When the Mishnah says you're not allowed to make a hole in the side, doesn't mean the side of the stopper, means hosim begufa dechavis, means the side of the barrel itself. Well, in other words, you have the barrel itself, and then you have the stopper that goes into the hole on the top. So Rav Chista is saying, the Mishnah, Rav Chista is saying that, like this, to make a hole, so again, Rav Huna is saying, to make a hole on the top of the stopper, Rabbi Yehuda would say is also, the Chum say is mutter. To make a hole in the side of the stopper, they would agree is also. And to make a hole in the side of the barrel, how much more so would be also? And then there's the barrel further down, right? Whereas Rav Chista would say, to make a hole on the top of the stopper, everybody would say is mutter. To make a hole on the side of the stopper, that's where you have the machlokas. And to make a hole in the side of the barrel, everybody would agree is also. The halacha, all of the poskim, paskim, like Rav Huna, particularly on the grounds of Rav Huna was Rav Chista's Rebbe, and we have the general rule, until Abaye and Rava, the halacha is usually like a Rebbe against his Talmud. So again, Rav Huna holds, Rav Huna is the one who's more machmer, and says you can't make a hole in the side, you can't make a hole in the side of the stopper, let alone the side of the barrel. Okay. Turn it up on. You're not allowed to make a new hole in a barrel or in any kind of keli on Shabbos. The imbala hoisif, but if you're going to be adding to an existing hole, you're going to be making an existing hole larger, moisif, then you're allowed to do that. The yesh oimim ain moisifin, but yesh oimim that you're not allowed to. The shovin, both the chachamim and the yesh oimim hold. They both agree that you are allowed to reopen an old hole. So in other words, again, we have like this. You could be making a new hole, which everybody agrees is also. There could be you had an existing hole and now you're making it larger, which is a machloikas of the Chachamim and Yeshayimim. Yeshayimim usually means Rav Nassan. Rav Nassan is usually, Rav Meir is usually Acherim. And then you have if there was already a hole there when it was closed and you're just reopening the hole, then everybody would agree that that's mutter. Okay, so the question is, now according to the Tanakhama, why is there a difference between making a new hole and enlarging an existing hole? If you're saying you can't make a hole to begin with to come a second pischa because you're making a hole and therefore you're doing gemar malacha, you're doing makar patish. Wouldn't the same thing be true if you're adding to an, if you're enlarging an existing hole? You're also improving the keli. So why wouldn't it be makar patish? The answer is Amar Rabba, like this. Dvar Torah. Minat Torah, kol pesach she'ene osa lahachnes olahoitzi. Any opening that is not made to take things in and out, ene pesach is not considered midaraisa a hole. When we talk about that you're not allowed to make holes and openings in things on Shabbos, and we make a patish or soyser or what have you, or boiner or soyser or what have you, that's only midaraisa, only for the kind of hole or opening which is meant to take things in and out. Now, when you get down to it, a hole in a barrel of wine, you're not putting anything in through there. You're not going to pour in wine through the hole. You're only going to use it to take out wine from the container. So it's only also the Rabbanan. But Rabbanan who de gozer mishum lul shel tanagolim. The Chachamim said that even a one-way hole is usur because you might confuse it with a hole in a chicken coop. Now you have a chicken coop, you need to make a hole in it for ventilation, to get in fresh air and to get out the stale air. The point is, though, people don't necessarily realize when they make that hole that it actually serves both of those purposes. People think of it in terms of it'll get the chickens fresh air. It doesn't occur to them that it also allows the stale, smelly air from inside to escape. So therefore, people, it is good, but the problem is that that would be considered an opening on Shabbos. In other words, the point is, Tosfos says at the top of Amud Beis, that the vote is, when a person makes a hole in a lul shel tanagolim, it is considered a hole on a daraisa level. And if you were to make it on Shabbos, he is chayiv chatas for it because it is meant for both in and out. It is meant for fresh air to come in and stale, dirty air to go out. People don't realize that, though. People think that it's a one-way hole. So if you allow a person to make a one-way hole on Shabbos, they may think, in that case, one of the one-way holes I can make on Shabbos is the hole in a chicken coop. And they're not going to realize that that's actually a two-way hole and they're chayiv chatas for it. So to avoid that, the Chachamim made a gzera that you can't make a one-way hole either. So that's why you're not allowed to make a new hole over here. A one-way hole, meaning one that's meant only for things to go out or only for things to go in. So like over here, a hole in a wine barrel, you're only using the hole to pour wine out of the container. You're not using the hole to pour wine or anything else in. So that's why the Chachamim say you're not allowed to make the hole l'chatchila, because you might mistakenly then make a hole in a lul shel tanagolim. But the imbala hoisif moisif, so why do the Chachamim say, why does the Tanakhama and the Braisa say that you're allowed to add to enlarge an existing hole? Because oisufi vade b'lul shel tanagolim, like also oisufi. Because if the whole problem is that you might confuse it with a lul shel tanagolim, nobody is going to enlarge a hole in a lul shel tanagolim, mishum richsha. Because what would happen? You make the hole too large, then you're allowing creatures that shouldn't be there, like for example, foxes, for example, weasels or other such things that are going to kill or harm the chickens are going to be able to get in through a too large hole. So you're going to l'chatchila make the hole the right size and you're not going to enlarge it. So therefore, according to the Tanakhama, we don't have any reason to be gozer about enlarging a hole because you might come to do it with a chicken coop because you're not going to enlarge a hole in a chicken coop. You're going to make it the right size to begin with and then you're going to stop. We learned about the chicken coop previously. We learned about making a hole in it, that it is, of course, so again, according to, so it was more than 2 weeks ago, I think, but yeah, we did talk about it, that if it's attached to the ground, then definitely there's bona and sosa involved, and if it's not attached to the ground, then you have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, whether binyan and stira applies to kalim or not. Rashi says it never does, Tosfos says sometimes it does. Okay, so that was the chacham. The yesh omrim ein meisifin. Now we said, on the other hand, yesh omrim, that you're not allowed to enlarge the existing hole. Why? Because even with a chicken coop, zimn l'takne meikra, sure, you're not going to make the hole too large because you don't want weasels or whatever to come in. But after all, it might happen that you didn't make the hole the right size in the first place. It wasn't big enough to ventilate the chicken coop, and v'osi la'avuchibe, and then you're going to come to enlarge it. So therefore, the yesh omrim say that you have the same problem with that as with enlarging a hole as with making a new hole, that we're afraid he might do it on Shabbos with a lul shel tana golem, where it would be an isser daraisa, and therefore we're going to ask him to enlarge an existing hole, even where it's not also daraisa, like in a wine barrel. So the halacha is like the yesh omim. You're not allowed to enlarge an existing hole. No. So again, taking out the stopper is not a problem because that's not creating a hole. The stopper is something separate from the barrel. What we're talking about over here before is about making a hole in it. So for example, we had Rav Shesha saying you can't stick a knife or a sword or whatever into it to make a hole, because that's not ayin yofa. Ayin yofa would be that the ayin yofa would be if you take off the whole top of it, or take out the stopper at least. What we said is, we said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to break a barrel in order to get at the gregers. But again, we said that according to Rashi, because you're being mekalkel, you're breaking it, and mekalkel is mutter. And according to Tosfos, because anyway, the barrel was already pre-broken. But when you have a regular complete barrel and you're making a hole in it, that we're saying would be also. Okay. We said v'shoven shenoikven yek neck of yosh l'chila. We said though both the Tanakama and yesh omrim say that you are allowed to reopen an old hole in a barrel or whatever. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, but that depends also. Lo shonu ela b'makom ha'osi l'shamer. When do we say that you're allowed to reopen the hole only if the hole is in a place on the barrel where it's only meant to preserve the wine? Av lechazik also, but if it's the kind of place where it had to be made, where it had to be closed, where not where the hole was made, where the hole was closed up in order to preserve the wine, to preserve the smell of the wine, in other words. So you can have, like this, you have a barrel of wine is left open, or you have a hole in it, then the wine is going to start turning to vinegar. The smell of it is going to dissipate, and it's going to start turning to vinegar. So therefore, instead, you close up the hole. So that kind of hole, if you closed it up, you'd be allowed to reopen on Shabbos, but not where the hole was closed up in order to make the barrel stronger, because then you have to really close up the hole tightly, and then when you open it up on Shabbos, then it's like making a new hole. So heichi domi l'shamer, heichi domi l'chazik. How do we define the difference? What's l'shamer? What's l'chazik? So omen of chista l'maylem in ayayin zeru l'shamer. If the hole is above the level of the wine in the barrel, then it's l'shamer, because then you don't need to close it in order to keep the wine from spilling out. So therefore, you're obviously only doing it in order to preserve the flavor of the wine. So that kind of hole, you don't seal up that tightly to begin with. So therefore, you're allowed to reopen the hole on Shabbos. L'matem in ayayin, but if the hole is below the level of the wine in the barrel, zo lechazik, then it's lechazik, because then obviously you have to close it very, very tightly in order that the wine doesn't leak out. Rava Amar, Rava says, or Hagoy Sabach says, Rabba says, no. Even if it's below the surface of the wine, that's also l'shamer, because the fact is you don't have the whole pressure of the wine lean on that part of the barrel. So therefore, you're able to do like a not so strong of a plug, and it still won't leak out because you don't have the full pressure. You don't have the full liquid pressure pressuring down on it. So what would be l'chazik? According to Rava, only if the hole was made below where the dregs in the wine are, meaning all the way at the bottom of the barrel where the dregs collect, there, since it's at the bottom and you have the full weight of the wine pressing on it, there you're really going to need to make a very strong closure for the hole, a very strong plug for the hole, and therefore if you take it out on Shabbos, it's like making a new hole. Well, that's true, but that's neither here nor there. We're not saying you're not allowed to seal it on Shabbos. We just said in the Mishnah you're not allowed to seal it with wax, because then you might smooth it. The truth is, actually, now that you mention it, We did learn a couple of weeks ago that we talked about a young Talmid Chacham, Reb Chilkiya. We talked about a young Talmid Chacham, Reb Chiya Bar Chilavon, or whatever, who would play. He would do certain things on Shabbos that seemed to be also, but he would make the excuse that their mutter. One of them was if there was a hole in a barrel of wine, he would stick in a piece of a clove of garlic over there and say, "I need a place to store the garlic. I'm not really doing it in order to stuff up the barrel." Whereas over here, we seem to be saying that you are allowed to close it up as long as you don't close it up with wax. So there are a couple of different explanations among Achronim about it. One of the Beis Yosef himself says that the distinction, again, might be you're allowed to close up a hole that's above the surface of the wine that we're saying over here. They were talking about it was below the surface of the wine, and therefore he has to use that harama of putting in the clove of garlic and pretending like he's doing it in order to store it there. The Magid Mishnah and the Rambam gives a different explanation. He says that there's a difference between putting something on the outside of the hole versus putting it into the hole. The wax in our Mishnah that we're saying that you're not allowed to do is the problem is because you're smearing it, but if it weren't for the problem of smearing, it's just going on the outside of the hole, then it would be mutter, as opposed to there, we're talking about something putting something inside the hole. Okay. Fine. Tanya de Messiah. So Abaya says to Rava, I have a brisa that supports what you're saying, that only when a thing is solidly closed is it considered no longer a hole, which that's what you're saying. Only when you have a hole all the way at the bottom of the barrel, where then it has to be solidly, tightly closed, then we're saying it's considered like there's no hole there anymore, and to open it on Shabbos would be making a new hole, which is also, I have a brisa that supports your idea that any other kind of hole, even a hole further up on the barrel, even if it's below the surface of the wine, it's still not considered that the hole is completely gone because you don't have to close it so strongly. I have a braisa that expresses the same idea. The braisa says, "Bayis sosum, a house that's sealed up, yeshle arba amos, you still have the owner of the house has four amos in the chotzer." Meaning, the Gemara talks about in Bava Basra, like this, you have if two people own a chotzer, and then they want to split it, two or more people own a chotzer, and then they want to split it, how much of the chotzer does each one get? The rule is each person gets four amos in front of the door of their house, because they use it as sort of like a driveway to be able to load and unload their animals and packages and whatnot. And then once you subtract the four amos for the four amos in front of each doorway, then you split the rest of the chotzer evenly between them. So even if their house is closed, even if the door is sealed shut, he still has the four amos because he might decide at some point to reopen the door. But paratz patsimav. But if he took down the door frame, then ainle dalan amos, then that door doesn't get the four amos anymore, because by taking down the door frame and then closing up the thing, now it becomes now an igli milsa, right? He makes it like now it shows it's just like the rest of the wall. He's not going to ever use it as a doorway again. Similarly, Similarly, a house that's sealed up, if there's a mess inside, it's not matame everything around it. Now you have like this, a caver that's sealed closed on all sides, a person touches it on any side, or even Rashi says goes four amos within it, becomes tame. Because the whole caver is an oil over the mess. So therefore, anybody who touches the caver itself is going to become tummy because they touched an oil on mess. And for four amos around it, also Rashi says the chacham were gozer, because you might accidentally come and overshadow it and make an oil over it and not realize that you did. So therefore, midraban on you tummy if you get within four amos of this. But even if the house is sealed shut, even if the door is sealed shut, nevertheless, that din does not apply. But if you break down the door frame and then brick up the door, then it's metame everything around it, because now it becomes a caver sosum. So we see there's a difference between taking down the door frame and not. And the same thing over here, there's a difference between a strong sealing of a hole in a barrel where it's all the way at the bottom, where you have to seal it very strongly to keep any of the wine from leaking out, what with the pressure pressing down on the hole, versus further up in the wine where you don't have that problem. Tosfos, by the way, learns, as far as the second case involving the caver, when we say metame kol svivav, doesn't mean like Rashi says that it's metame four amos around it. Rather, Tosfos learns what it means is like this. You have a concept that if there's a mess inside the house, the doorways of that house, or even like if you have the doorways have an overhanging ledge or something, then under those ledges is tame, because you're going to take out the mess through one of those doorways, and therefore midrabanan, it's tame even now. But therefore, it's Tama even now. But if, so we have then, what if all of the doorways are closed? We still say that all of them are Matame, because eventually you're going to open one of them and take the mess out through it. What we're saying is, if you took down the door frame and bricked up the door, then you show by that that you're not planning to use that door in the future. Therefore, Kol Sviva, the area around that particular door, is not Matame, because you demonstrated by that that you don't plan to use it as a door anymore. Okay. All right. Another din, Gufsa. What about when it comes to sticking a straw into the hole in the barrel? You want the straw to function as like a faucet for the wine to come out of. Rav also a Shmuel Shori. Rav says you're not allowed to put it in on Shabbos. Shmuel says you're allowed to. So mechatech lachtchila, if we're talking about to begin with cutting a piece of reed to use as a straw like that, to kol amale pligid. Also, obviously, it's also that's masakin kli. Ahaduri, if the straw was already in there before Shabbos and then it came out and you want to put it back in on Shabbos to call Amalek Pligi Deshari, everybody would agree that's mutter. There's no Masak and Kli involved over there. You're just putting it back where it was. Ki Pligi Dehaticha V'le Masakna. The Machlokes says, if the reed was cut, but it was not ever yet put into the hole to make sure that it actually fits. So now you have the machlokes. Manda also. So Rav, who says it's also gazrin and duma osi lemechta chachila. He says you're making a gzera because you may come to cut it because after all you didn't make sure it's sized properly. So what if you find it's too big? What if you find it's too big, for example? Then you're going to cut it and you're going to be over on isur daraisa. So therefore, Rav would say it's also. Or manda shori, where's Shmuel, who says it's mutter. Manda shori loy gazrin, where's Shmuel, who says that it's mutter, would say we're not gozer on that. The Gemara says ketanoi. This is actually like a machlokes tanoim. Ein choisin shreferes b'yomtiv. A braisa says you're not allowed to cut a tube on yomtiv. The ein sorach loyim of a Shabbos. Needless to say, you can't cut it on Shabbos. On the other hand, nafla. But if it falls out of the barrel, machzirinois of a Shabbos. The ein is a mistake. Machzirinois of a Shabbos. You're allowed to put it back in on Shabbos. The ein sorach loyim of yomtiv. Needless to say, you're allowed to do it on yomtiv. V'Rabbi Yoshia mekel. Now Rabbi Yoshia is mekel. So the question is, Rabbi Yoshia Aheya, which part of the Braise is Rabbi Yoshia referring to that we're saying is Mekel? Ilema Aresha, are you saying is Mekel on the Resha, where the Tanakhama says you're not allowed to cut the tube on Yom Tov to size, and Rabbi Yoshia says you are? What do you mean? How come a sack and mana? How could he argue and say you're allowed to cut the tube? You're making a Kaili. You're making a Kaili, Rabbi on Shabbos, Makom Hatash, yeah. Ela Asefa. So, and are you talking about the Sefa, where the Tanakhama says that you're allowed to put back in the tube it fell out? Rabbi Yoshia doesn't need to tell us that it's mutter. Tanakam and Nami Mishra Kashori. The Tanakam also says it's mutter. Ela dechatichav lemesachne ikbenayu. So obviously, there must be the machlokas between them about the exact case we're talking about. The tube was previously cut before Shabbos, but you didn't stick it in to make sure it's the right size. So marsava gazrinin or marsava lagazrinin. So the Tanakama would say, therefore, that you're not allowed to. Rabbi Yoshia is mekel and says that you're allowed to. So that's exactly the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel. Okay, who's the halacha like? Dorosh of Shisha Breder of Idi Mishmei Rav Yechanan, halacha Rav Yoshia, and therefore you're allowed to, and therefore that would mean that since Shmuel holds a Rav Yoshia, then that means the halacha is like Shmuel. You would be allowed to stick in the tube, even if you did this straw, whatever, even if you didn't measure it before Shabbos. Okay. Right, so we're not worried that he's going to come to cut it to size if it turns out that it's too long or short or whatever. Okay. We said v'im hoisin nekuva v'chula, we said in the Mishnah, that if the hole was closed up with wax, then we said you're not allowed, if there was a hole, we said you're not allowed to close it up with wax because then you're going to come to smear the wax and that would be an Issur D'Oraisa. So the Gemara says, Mishcha, what about, are you allowed to use thick oil for the purpose? Now we're not talking about, you've asked a number of times, how is it you're allowed to smear oil on your skin? Isn't that this malacha of memachik? So a thin consistency oil, there's definitely no issue. Here we're talking about thick oil, which is somewhat like wax. So therefore, Rav also a Shmuel Shari. Rav would say it's also, Shmuel would say it's mutter. Manda also, the Rav who says it's also, because he says Gazrin and Mishum Shaiba. We make a gzeder that you're not allowed to because you might confuse it with wax because it's not quite as thick as wax, but it's still got a somewhat thick consistency, and therefore we're concerned that if you're allowed to do that, then you're going to do the same thing with actual wax. Or Manda Shari, like Gazrin, where Shmuel says we don't make the gzeder. Amulet of Shmuel Baba Chana to Rabbi Yosef, Beferush Amritlan Mishmei Rav Mishcha Shari. So Rav Shmuel Baba Chana says to Rabbi Yosef, "What do you mean?" Rav says it's also. You explicitly told us in the name of Rav that you were allowed to use thick oil like that. Nevertheless, even though he says that, the poskim paskin like Rav in general, the halacha and machloikas in Hilchos Shabbos, we usually paskin like Rav, and the poskim paskin like the first version of Rav, like the Stamma de Gemara's version of Rav, then in fact it is also, which is why we're not allowed to smear creams and ointments and things like that on Shabbos. Okay, what about another case? A leaf of a hadas. Also, you're also to use it for getting the wine out of the barrel on Shabbos. My timer, why is that? Rabbi Yehuda Medifti, Amar Gzeira Mishum Marziv. So Rabbi Yehuda Medifti says the reason is because of Gzeira, because you might make it. Now, like this, what do you do with the taipa da'asa? Is the leaf itself has a natural bend to it. So you put it into the hole over there, and it serves as like sort of like a funnel for the wine to come out. But we're making a gzera because you might make an actual marziv, you might make an actual gutter or funnel like that, and that would be also because you're making a keli on Shabbos. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda Medifti. Rav Ashi Yom Gzera Shema Yiftim. Rav Ashi says a different reason. It's a gzera because he may cut off, or he may tear off a leaf from a branch on Shabbos in order to use it for the purpose. If he doesn't have a loose leaf available, he's going to tear off a leaf, and that would be a different issur of Shabbos. The Gemara says, "My binayu." What's the actual machlokas between them? Ikabinayu to kotim manchi. What about if you have the leaves? If you have a pile of leaves already in front of him that are already torn off the stems, then according to the Yehuda Medifti's din, according to the Yehuda Medifti, you'd still have a problem because you still have the problem that you may make an actual marziv. According to the Ashi, that it's just a problem. You may tear it off the branch, then there's no problem because you have a whole pile of leaves in front of you. And if this one doesn't work, you can just use a different one without having to tear anything off on Shabbos. It's a machlokas aposkim who the halacha is like. It's a machlokas aposkim who the halacha is like. The mechaber brings like Rabbi Yemar and the Rambam brings like Rabbi Ashi. Okay. Another case. Now this one is not really directly related to it is in Hilchos Shabbos, but it's also the kind of thing like the previous machlokas in where Rav said that something is mutter is also, and Shmuel says something is mutter, and we talk about a gzera. So we have a similar thing over here. Beisadia. What about it comes to felt, felt cushions? Usually you would use them, like for example, you don't have a pillow, you would use one of these felt cushions instead of a pillow or a blanket or something. The question is, are you allowed to wear them on Shabbos? Rav also a Shmuel Shari. Rav would say it's also to wear them in Rosh Hashanah. Rav and Shmuel would say it's mutter. So the Gemara says, "Berakin, if they're soft felt, the kula amalei pligi de shari." Everybody agrees it's mutter because then that's a normal kind of thing that you could wear as clothing. "Bekoshin de kula amalei pligi de also." If they're very stiff felt, everybody would agree that's also because you can't call that clothing. You're obviously wearing it on Shabbos in order to carry it from point A to point B. "Ki pligi be mitzi." The machlokas would be about medium ones. They're not so hard. They're not so soft. Manda also, so Rav, who says it's also, Mexikimasu, he says because it looks like you're carrying it on Shabbos because it's stiff enough that you don't normally wear it. Manda Shori, where's Shmuel? So this is Mutter, he says, Loi Mexikimasu. He says it doesn't look like it's carrying, it's not so stiff, therefore it can still be considered clothing. And the Gemara points out, Behod the Rav Lav Befedosh Itmar. Now, actually, this that we're saying that Rav said it's also, we never find that Rav said that explicitly. Ela Meklola Itmar. It was just, it was deduced from something that Rav said. The Rav Iklalahu Astra, Delay Havale Ravcha. Rav one time visited a certain place where there was no room, there wasn't any building large enough for them to be able to sit and learn and teach Torah. Nafak Yosef a Kaimelis. So he went to sit in the Kaimelis. Aisule Beisadia. They brought him out a Beisadia, one of these felt cushions. Lo Yosef, and he didn't want to sit on it. So they brought it in this way. Somebody wore it over there. Somebody wore it on over their clothing, whatever, and brought it over there for him to sit on. Lo Yosef, and he didn't sit on it. So Mandachaza, somebody who saw that happen, Savo, he thought, why didn't he wear it? And why didn't he want to sit on it? Mastama Mashum de Beisadia also. Because Rav would hold it was also to wear it on Shabbos, and therefore he would hold it was brought on Shabbos into Kaimelis Bederach Isser. But Veloihi, actually it's not so. The Rav Achruzi Machriz Beisadia Shari. As a matter of fact, Rav actually publicly announced that you are allowed to wear these kinds of felt things on Shabbos, again, as long as it's not too hard felt that nobody would ever wear. No, would never wear. In this case, there was a specific reason he didn't want to sit on these pushing. It's nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos, but rather because of the covet of our Rebbeim. Umaninu Rav Kahana of Rabasi. Rav Kahana and Rabasi, who were Talmidim Chaverim of Rav, they started out as Rav's Talmidim, but then they became Chaverim of his. So out of respect for them, nobody brought felt cushions for them to sit on, so they were going to be sitting on the floor, so Rav didn't want to sit on these felt cushions either, but nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. So since we see then, in other words, that Rav doesn't actually hold that it's also, he in fact holds its mutter, and Shmuel also holds its mutter, then the halacha is it is in fact mutter. Okay.